Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry, with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great, too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Saw the Iron Claw, and the detail that I didn't know was that, Kerry Von Erich was going to participate in the discus in the 1980 Olympics had Jimmy Carter not pulled us out. And so Jimmy Carter comes off as a real heel in the movie.
I bet.
I had a friend in high school whose dad was a rower who was going to be on the 1980 Olympic team and basically never forgave Jimmy Carter. So
I wish I was a rower.
Yeah? Is that the... You're built for it.
I'm built for it, and yeah. It's like, you're in great shape, and it's a lot of sitting.
I didn't see that coming as one of your arguments in favor. It's a lot of sitting. Yeah. It's a lot of effort though too.
A lot of effort, not discounting the effort, but at least you get to sit while you're doing it. So okay, I think that
I suppose.
I could have ended up at an Ivy League school because that's who ends up going.
Right.
You know,
that's
these,
true.
You
Although know. Then you would have also ended up in some kind of weird secret society.
Are you in a weird secret society?
No, but I didn't row. What I'm saying specifically. Like, I'm just thinking of the what's his name from Dawson's Creek, Josh Jackson. Is that the actor's name who played Pacey? Anyway, the movie The Skulls. Do you remember that?
I never saw it.
It's ringing half a bell. Yeah, that was all about. He was a rower at Harvard, and there was a whole secret society thing going on. So based on that one character in one minor forgotten movie, I assume anyone who rows in the Ivy League is in a secret society.
Yeah, I mean, I could probably use a secret society, now that I'm thinking about it, listen, right now I murder somebody, I'm on my own.
Right, that's true. You're not connected like you would be if you were part of a secret Ivy League rowing society.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I could have been a rower. I'm like, I'm like 6'3". I got like the long, lean, I got the long build. I used to have the lean build.
The adjective, Jeff, is lithe. You were in your prime quite lithe.
I was the litheest.
You were drawn lithe back then.
I was drawn lithe indeed.
Gamble on, fellas. Gamble on.
Welcome again to Gamble On, a weekly gambling podcast presented by USBets.com. I'm Eric Raskin, US Bets Managing Editor and Media Director, and I'm joined by my co-host, US Bets Senior Analyst Jeff Edelstein. This week on Gamble On, we're going back to our two steadiest ongoing legalization beats, New York iCasino and California sports betting. Plus, we'll explore a question far more important than what New York or California does. Can Rob Gronkowski improve to 1-for-2 lifetime on 25-yard field goal attempts?
Yeah, also coming up in the pod, we're going to welcome Roto Grinders, Scores, and Ozzy. Yeah, he's a jack of all trades for us over here. Will Priester, a.k.a. the Chief. We're going to be talking about NFL wildcard weekend while Eric tries to prevent the Chief and I from talking Korean baseball. But first, as always, plenty of news to discuss.
Here's your Gamble On News of the Week, an inside look at the biggest stories in the world of gambling.
Before Before we get into this week's three podcast news stories, a quick note on what is actually, in some regards, the most notable industry news of the week. Vermont sports betting has launched. It went live at 12:01 a.m. Thursday. The citizens of Vermont can now bet legally through FanDuel, DraftKings, and Fanatics, and that's about all there is to say about that. So now on to our podcast news stories, each of which should give us more to talk about than Vermont. We start in New York, where two bits of news related to iCasino legalization have trickled out. First, Jeff, you talked to Senator Addabbo's office on Friday, and they said a new online casino bill should be introduced either this week or next. The expectation is that it will include the legalization of iLottery, include funding for casino workers and problem gambling, allow as many as 20 licenses, and set the tax rate at 30.5%. Additionally, on Tuesday, the Sports Betting Alliance, a trade group made up of FanDuel, DraftKings, Fanatics, and BetMGM, released an advertisement calling for New York legislators to legalize iCasino. The ad focuses on New York's budget woes and how iGaming can solve them without the state needing to raise taxes. One separate but related story, Maine has entered the iGaming chat with the state's tribes backing bills to expand gambling to include iCasino, historical horse racing, and more brick-and-mortar casinos. Jeff, we keep hearing predictions that no new states will legalize iCasino this year. Care to push back at all on those predictions? Any thoughts on the latest incremental movement in New York?
All right, I'm putting New York as a coin flip, -110 either side. Okay. That's where I'm at. Will the governor include it in her budget? That's the only question. If she does, I am guessing that Addabbo will have the horses to get it across the finish line. Maine, I don't know. It sounds like it's not going to happen anytime like now, right? But I'm glad that they got the ball rolling. Yeah, I just think there's something here with New York. Like, you know, Addabbo, you know, he knows what he's doing, obviously. He got, you know, the sports betting through. This has been, you know, this has not been a quiet thing he's been doing. It's a budget thing, you know, there's, you know, money to go around. I think if the government puts it in a budget, they'll get this through. I tell you, I do have to laugh at the, you know, I feel like we need, like, you know, theme music here for the Sports Betting Alliance. I see the sports betting. I didn't know who the Sports Betting Alliance was until I clicked on who we are. I mean, it's like three kids wearing a trench coat trying to get into a bar. You know what I mean? I mean, can we just call it? We're the sports books. We want to bring iCasino, the Sports Betting Alliance. It's so silly.
Yeah.
But I guess that's America for you.
I've never been part of an alliance. I'd like to be part of an alliance before I die.
Yeah, well, I could see. I mean, maybe I have nothing to add to that. What kind of? I mean, like a real. I mean, this alliance. I mean, it's a silly. This is the silliest thing I've ever heard of. The Sports Betting Alliance.
Right.
It sounds so like, you know, big and scary. It's just the four sports books.
Yeah, I know. I never went on Survivor when I was young and physically able to do so, but that would have been a chance to join an alliance.
That's right. Did you ever try out? Did you ever send a tape?
Nah, never made a tape. I thought about it. Never went that far.
I've been thinking. You know what? We don't watch it that much anymore, but we did, and my son liked it. My son is he'll be turning 15. I have the idea to start sending tapes in for him now, saying. I'm 14. I'm not eligible, but I'm coming. And then send another one next year. Like, here I am again.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
That's
like,
a good idea.
Really, like, it's not a bad idea, right?
Can I help in that effort somehow, get behind it and be part of your Get Your Son on Survivor Alliance? I just really want to be part of an alliance, Jeff.
I mean, I guess. I mean, are you good with editing software?
Audio.
Close. If you could do audio, you could do video, I'm sure.
Probably. Okay. getting back to New York iCasino, so I'm in a similar spot to you in terms of where I'm setting the line here. Maybe a teeny bit less optimistic than you, just because I guess you can never look too stupid betting the no on any legalization of any form of gambling in a given year. But yeah, New York is certainly looking increasingly possible, if I still wouldn't quite call it likely. Obviously, yeah, the budget will have most of the info we need when that comes out, but yeah, the way I see it, I'd still probably say an underdog to legalize this year, but it's close. And certainly when combined with the other states, like Maryland, the states that have a chance, I have to say overall, I would think over 0.5 states legalizing iCasino in 2024 should be minus money at this point. I think it's more likely someone gets there than no one gets there. I tend to doubt it'll be Maine. Things move slowly there anyway. Tribal interests make it complicated. Governor vetoes are a concern, as we learned with the first sports betting bill they passed. So I don't think Maine is very serious right now. But yeah, in New York, certainly the advertising angle they're taking is smart. In terms of getting public sentiment behind it, this is the right angle to play. Hey, would you rather we legalize iGaming or raise your taxes and or cut social services? Pretty right. Smart angle there.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. So if New York iCasino legalization has some uphill climb elements to it, that's nothing compared to California sports betting, which looks more and more like a pipe dream every day. And once again, the Sports Betting Alliance is involved in this story as well. This week, the SBA issued a statement saying the commercial operators...
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Would not be supporting the ballot initiative currently proposed in California by Casey Thompson and his group. Specifically, the SBA expressed opposition to the idea of cleansing offshore operators and making them part of this. On Wednesday, tribal leaders Victor Rocha and James Siva held their latest web broadcast ragging on the Thompson effort, saying it is, quote, destined to fail, and that it could serve to hurt the chances of a future sports betting bill succeeding. Siva said on the webcast that he thinks either 2 years or 4 years is realistic for California legalizing sports betting. Jeff, should the Thompson group just scrap this effort at this point, or is it worth pushing through and seeing if they can get the signatures? And would you say opposition from the major commercial operators to this was inevitable?
They started, they might as well finish. You know, it's not going to happen, but it's nice to try. Okay. I don't know. The Sports Betting Alliance does strike again, though. were you an Arrested Development fan?
I have watched the original seasons, not the Netflix revival, but I've watched all of the original seasons once. I binged it during COVID. I had not seen it prior to that. I would describe myself as, I liked it. I can't claim to be anywhere near a super fan like you are.
Yeah. Well, Job was a member of for a time he was a member of the Magicians Alliance.
Oh, right.
I think their motto was, we demand to be taken seriously, or something to that effect.
Right.
Which is, again, the Sports Betting Alliance is killing me. All right, California. in his Straight to the Point newsletter today, Steve Ruddick, I think he said something to the effect of, sports betting is not happening in California until the tribes say so. Right?
Right.
And that's that. And until the tribes are, and Jill Dorson said this to us, our colleague, they are looking, they do not look at this stuff the way we look at this stuff. Right. They are not thinking in terms of, month to month, quarter to quarter, year to year. They're thinking in much longer terms. Mm-hmm. They're not going to do this until they're ready. And they're not going to get ready until they could all sit down and agree. There's $1 billion to be made out here. You would think that money would eventually move the needle. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. I'm getting close, Eric, to instituting a moratorium on talking about California sports betting on this podcast.
I understand the sentiment and the emotion behind that, but at the same time, the fact that California is still kicking around ideas and will be for some time probably, that kind of gives us something to do, gives us something to cover. I don't know that we can turn our back on it just because we find it kind of annoying. I think in a sense, it's our lifeblood as reporters in this industry. Now that as more and more major states do legalize, and there are only so many intriguing states left out there.
You know, on Family Guy, when they go to the weatherman on the news forecast, like, you know, what's the weather today? It's going to rain. And then like they cut right back to like the desk. Uh-huh. That's basically where, ask me anything about California.
Do you think California's going to legalize in 2 years?
No.
Okay. All right. All right. So it's not a moratorium. It's just a moratorium on you expounding on your answers regarding California.
I really, we talk about this till we're blue in the face. Nothing is going to happen until the tribes say so.
True, but we're not
close to that.
Okay, so all right, so my asking you questions about whether you think something positive is going to happen, I can put a moratorium on that.
Okay,
I think we still have to address it every time there's news regarding California.
Okay, fine.
I'm not gonna argue
about this.
Okay, right. Because that would violate the moratorium.
It would, absolutely.
But in this instance, you know, once you have both the tribes against you, at least the power players among the tribes, right, and the commercial operators, yeah, I actually would say it's time to cut your losses and just abandon this thing. And maybe, you know, Casey's group gives itself some chance of still being involved by saying, okay, you convinced us, we're out, let's all work together to discuss this and maybe find some common ground and bring this together in the next few years. But
you know what I would love to know, and it's an unknowable. What I'd love to know, I would love to know what the number is on the online illegal sports betting market in California.
Yeah,
I'd love to know what that number is.
Yeah, I too would love to know. It's got to be massive. I mean, like, how let's say that the 4 years prediction is right, and that puts us in 2028. How sad and pathetic is it that when you step back and look at, you know, past Buffel in 2018, it will be a full decade later and Californians still will have offshore books as their only, well, offshore books or Sebastian Maniscalco. Those are their options 10 years after PASPA. There's a lot of blame to go around.
Have you watched the show?
Just the first episode. I didn't come back. No, just the one. That was enough. Yeah. But your article on it did very good traffic.
Oh, did it?
Yeah. It was, I think, like the most clicked sports handle article of the last several weeks. Yeah. So there's that. So if you want to rag on it, if you want to check back in,
binge the rest of
the season and watch it again or write about it again. Yeah.
Maybe I will.
Do it for the clicks, Jeff.
All right.
Okay. All right. Our last story this week. Get excited. It's back. Kick of Destiny 2 is coming. During last year's Super Bowl, Rob Gronkowski missed a live 25-yard field goal attempt wide left, and FanDuel customers all got $5 free bets in their accounts anyway because actions no longer have consequences, I guess. FanDuel is bringing the promotion back for this year's Super Bowl, but with a twist. Customers have to predict whether Gronk will make or miss his kick, and those who guess correctly will win their share of $10 million in bonus bets, so probably around a $5 bet if they're lucky. The commercials this year include a long-haired Gronk wandering the desert in a depression since missing last year's kick, Carl Weathers showing up to coach Gronk, and we haven't seen him yet, but John Cena playing a villain who is fading Gronk. Jeff, handicap the kick for me, analyze the impact of a proven winning coach in Carl Weathers, and tell me your thoughts on the promotion and FanDuel's decision to tee it up a second time.
I'd say Gronkowski, I'm going to put him at minus 800 to nail this one.
Wow, okay.
No way. I mean, it was the wind played a role last year. There's no way he misses it twice in a row. It's possible. Carl Weathers, brilliant casting. And thanks to Jessica Wellman over at SBC, I'm back down the Arrested Development rabbit hole. I just can't stop. You know, he played an acting coach with a penchant for Stu, of course, on the show. And, you know, you got Stu going. And so, you know, I think that, you know, it's a good cast. I'm curious to see if they go the more Rocky route, which I'm assuming, or if they go, you know, the Apollo Creed route, as opposed to the Arrested Development route, I'm sure.
I would assume so, yes.
If they throw a bone to Arrested Development, I will be thrilled. And listen, you know what? I'm all for this goofy shit. I mean, you know, this industry takes itself so fucking seriously all the time. This is sports betting at the end of the day. I think we're allowed to have a little fun. So, yeah, you know, Let's go for it.
Okay. I actually forgot he was on Arrested Development until I saw you exchanging tweets with Jess Wellman about it. It's the way that my memory works. If I watch something once, no matter how much I enjoyed it, I have almost no recall. I need to have watched something multiple times.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way.
Yeah. So I was looking up his IMDb where I see that he was also on two episodes of The Shield, which is one of my all-time favorite shows, like probably a top five show for me. But I only watched it once, so I have absolutely no recollection of him being on that. But yeah, Carl Weathers may be the GOAT when it comes to coach characters. I mean, spoilers for Rocky III, he reversed Rocky's loss to Clubber Lang. And what happened to him in Rocky IV was not a failure of coaching, certainly. Even more impressive, spoilers for Happy Gilmore, Chubbs Peterson took a guy with no golf experience and molded him into a champion. So, the track record is there. I do think we're leaning into the Apollo Creed, not the Arrested Development character that Carl Weathers played.
You know, is Carl Weathers this is like a Bill Simmons article, like the Ringer article to be written. Mm-hmm. He's got to be one of the more underrated actors of our time. Not in talent level,
right.
Just in like sheer like. He's been around forever.
And yeah.
Like, I feel like he was 50 years old in Rocky. You know what I mean?
Right,
like, I don't
right.
understand. Like, he looks exactly the same.
Yeah, he has one of the most enviable careers that you look back and what he even got to headline his own movie one time, Action Jackson. Didn't go great, but Sharon Stone as his co-star, young pre-prime Sharon Stone. I mean, he's had a great career. You know who I always think of? For like the career I envy, just playing to all of my preferences. Do you know who Larry Henkin is? Does that name mean anything to you?
Did he play Kramer?
Wow, good job! Yes, he played the fake Kramer
on
the show within the show on Seinfeld. So he appeared on Seinfeld. He had a recurring character on Breaking Bad. Those are my two all-time favorite shows. He also was the upstairs neighbor in Friends, which is another show I rather enjoy. He was in Billy Madison, which is my favorite comedy movie. He really bit parts in things I love. Larry Henkin is the king.
What do you think of Seinfeld? And like, apparently they're going to be doing something about like redoing the show again, like, you know, redoing the ending or something. Like,
yeah, I remember seeing something about that.
And
now I can't remember.
It
was it
real.
Was it? Because
it was Seinfeld. He was on stage. He was doing a bit.
But was he? I thought I read someone speculating he was just teasing like a Super Bowl commercial or something.
Well, I don't know, but I mean, they're going to something is going to happen, you know, as a result of all. I'm curious to see what they do.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of did it already with Curb Your Enthusiasm, but they got their redo, so that's why I don't know. I'm skeptical.
That was so good.
It was. I suppose I should give my own handicapping on the kick quickly.
Yeah.
So it's a 25-yarder. I think right now, in my own personal physically washed, bad back state, you center a ball on a tee for me from the 15-yard line. You know, give me good conditions, no wind, no slippery turf. I'm like 25% to make it with no practice. So I'll take that. You're taking the opposite side or you're backing
me?
Yeah,
I'll take the opposite side.
So I'm getting 3-1.
Yeah, you're just going to show up at a football field today and like kick a field goal. Yeah, I'll take that action.
All right. Let's we really need to organize this. I get to stretch, but I don't get to train. I think that. OK. All right. Gronk. 15 years or so younger than me, a former pro athlete, having trained for this twice now. I wasn't ready to make him minus 800, but I was going to say something like 75-25 to make it. But let's say it is 75-25. Game theory then enters the equation here. You know, will more than 75% of FanDuel customers predict that he makes it? If only like 20% are predicting no, then your free bet, if you go on that side and it wins, is four times the size of your free bet on the other side. The fact that I'm analyzing it this much means FanDuel is correct to do the promotion again. They're getting their money's worth and then some. There's only one way that they can really piss me off with this, because I agree with you. It's very fun. Why not? Let's have some fun. They can piss me off if they give bonus bets to everyone, whether he makes or misses. And that wouldn't surprise me. You know, he makes it, and if you picked Gronk to make the kick, you get a $4 bonus bet. But if you picked him to miss, you also get a $4 bonus bet. Don't pull that shit, FanDuel. Actions must have consequences. Mm.
That's a motto.
Yes. That's the motto for our alliance, Jeff.
It's time to welcome a special guest from the world of gambling. Let's get to the Gamble On interview.
Don't be sad that the NFL regular season is over. Be happy that the NFL playoffs are beginning, and with them come playoff best ball, playoff DFS, the culmination of season-long future sweats, and much more. Joining us now to talk all things NFL playoff gambling is the co-host of the Food for Thought podcast, an analyst of both NFL and NBA at RotoGrinders. You know him as the Chief, Will Priester. Will, welcome to Gamble On.
Eric, thank you for having me. So excited to come on with you guys. Feels like a pretty good time too, right before wild card weekend. And I promise I'm not going to get into NBA and MLB. I'm going to stick to the script here, but so many other things coming down the pipeline. So it's a good time to be in the space for sure.
It's one thing to have NBA on your mind right now. That makes sense. But to have MLB on your mind already, that shows devotion to the fact that it's January and you're thinking MLB a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, MLB is actually my bread and butter. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Jeff and I think we connected during like what I'm going to call the decimation of American sports. And we connected through KBO. Oh, and I will correct. Say, Jeff, I'm still dabbling in KBO to this day. Nothing has changed. So that's actually one of the highlights of my year is KBO coming back, because I get to dig in and I still know all the players, the names, and I've just kind of kept that going. So anyway, I'm not going to go down a rabbit hole with KBO, but that's how me and Jeff can.
I will. I'll go down the rabbit hole. I wish DraftKings doesn't offer DFS contest anymore. That's where my interest. I would have my alarm set. My alarm would go off at 5:20 in the morning. I'd make sure my lineups and my players in the lineups. I'd go back to sleep. I'd wake up around 7:15 in the morning, and I'm in the middle of a sweat.
Yeah,
I got near Korean baseball. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. It was what a time to be alive.
Yeah. All right. I think the listeners are probably counting on me to dig us out of this rabbit hole. That was fine. 45 seconds of KBO rabbit hole is acceptable. But let's talk some NFL, Will. I'm an Eagles fan, so I got to start with an Eagles question. How in the blue hell is this god-awful football team favored in a playoff game right now? Now, I know that Tampa is mediocre at best, but, I mean, watching the Eagles play the last 2 weeks especially, they look like a bottom five NFL team right now. So, Will, do you see value in Tampa +3, or is there something I'm missing here, some reason to believe the Eagles can suddenly reverse six straight weeks of sucking?
I think the value's in Tampa. They're at home. I can't go against them right now. And I mean, you know, maybe we'll get some big money shifting this thing later in the week. Like perhaps some sharp money comes in. But even for me, I do consider myself a sharp, even though I'm not going to have, you know, $500,000 in this game. I think the value's in the money line. Like, yeah, I mean, the points are, don't get me wrong, but whenever I can get someone that I feel confident is going to win at home and they're giving me plus money, I can't give that away. So for me, I love +3. Like, I think that's incredible. I'm probably going to take them both for what it's worth, but I think Tampa wins outright. You know, when I looked over everything from the season, and especially the DVOA numbers, even though maybe it's a little antiquated, maybe it's not, I don't know what side of the fence you're on. But when I look and I see that the Eagles defense is like one of the worst of the weekend, not Monday, the weekend, right. They're one of the worst. Tampa's middle of the road, but I can't bet against Mike Evans and Baker Mayfield and Todd Bowles and their ability to get some pressure. They are going to pressure this offensive line a little bit. I can't give that away. I think Tampa wins this thing outright.
Yeah, I, as an Eagles fan, I hate to say it, but I think you're right. I mean, but at the same time, is there a case that these are actually the two worst teams in the playoffs right now, that they both got lucky to draw each other, that maybe any other team other than maybe the Steelers would be favored against either of these teams?
Yeah, I would say so. And I think that speaks to how bad the NFC South was. Now, I'm not going to get into that either because I'm a Panthers fan. So okay. I don't have a whole lot to say about the NFC South other than the whole division was just rough this season. But I do think, in a nutshell, the best team came out of there. And I'm actually secretly, I'm happy that Mike Evans gets another playoff game, because he's just continuing to add to this Hall of Fame career, which is why I honestly think they're going to get out of this thing, you know, unscathed. Here's where I draw the line. Okay, you know, you struggle against Arizona. They've been a, Arizona's been a fairly tough team all season anyway. Like, they, you know, they've had some sneaky good wins against other good teams. When you roll into New York and you play the Giants, and I'm not saying Tyrod Taylor's bad, but when you have to have it and you just can't get it done, they don't lose by three. They get demolished.
Yep.
No way they roll into Tampa and send this team packing. I can't see it.
All right, let's go to the AFC for a second. Kansas City, you know, they've looked lost all year, you know, I think. They face a Miami team that we know has been able to put some points on the board when healthy. You know, Miami's dealing with a lot of injuries. Do you think McDaniel, is he going to be able to game plan his way out of this road game in 0-degree temperatures? And, you know, I think last I checked this morning, I think it was 4 points Kansas City was favored by. I'm, you know, a 3-point, you know, the home favorite, you know, you give a few points to the home team, blah, blah, blah. I got to think, if this game was in Miami, though, if Miami won that game against Buffalo last week, and if this game was in Miami, I think Miami would be like, I think it'd be completely flipped. I think Miami would be like 4-point favorites. I think it'd be a huge swing. So I think, yeah, the home field, the Kansas City weather, all that plays a role here. But how do you see this game going?
Well, let me say right out of the gate, this is probably one of my better ones of the week. Miami plus 4 is absolutely the right play here. Like, I don't – what has Kansas City done this season to show us that they're capable of running away with any game? They didn't do it against Denver. They didn't do it against the Raiders. They barely ran away against anyone. And, you know, barring some meltdowns in that game in Germany – Miami probably walks out of there with a win. So I don't think the Chiefs are suddenly going to, you know, start blowing teams out. They haven't done it all season. Let me also say, this actually was started happening last season, but we all ignored it because they won a Super Bowl. I don't know if everyone remembers the middle of last season, somewhere around five or, well, let's not say middle, early mid to the midpoint of the season. After 5 or 6 games, we're like, well, what's going on with the Chiefs? Do you remember that? Patrick Mahomes is playing bad. He's throwing interceptions. And they had about the same roster. They just happened to get out of there with the Super Bowl, and everybody thought the sky wasn't falling. This started last season. I digress. This season, it's starting to show up. And so lucky for them, they're at home. Sadly for Miami, they lose last week and go from 2 to the 6th seed. How awful was that? I still think Miami's the better team here. They haven't done it consistently on the road against good teams. They didn't do it against the Eagles. They didn't do it against Buffalo. All these good teams. They did beat the Cowboys at home with 5 or 6 field goals. I get it. But I just don't think the Chiefs' offense is in anywhere near the same class. And if they get behind in this game, how in the world are they going to catch up at all, even with the 0-degree weather? I trust their defense. I trust Chris Jones. I don't trust his offense. I think Miami plus 4 is probably should have been plus 3 at most. Mm. Plus 4 is too much, I think, in this game.
Yep.
So looking ahead a little bit, not just focused on the wild card round games, but sort of some futures, maybe some conferences. Is there any value in a long shot to win either conference right now in your eyes? Like, I'm seeing the Rams as high as 22-1, the Browns as high as 14-1. Those two jump out at me a little bit. Do you think either of those are decent plays, or is it silly to invest in anyone other than the 49ers and Ravens this year?
I think for me, ironically, I think there's value in both. Here's why I will say that. Baltimore doesn't want to see Cleveland right before the Super Bowl, because that's when I think they would see them if Miami wins. Now, because the way they've got this thing, Miami's a 6 seed, so they would actually see Baltimore the next week if they won.
Right.
If Cleveland wins in Miami, and I know this is all speculative, but this is why I think there's value in both. Cleveland may not have to see Baltimore until the AFC Championship. That's literally when they may see them if they win out. And ironically for the Rams, I think that's the one team in the NFC that San Francisco doesn't want to see, because they see them all year. I don't think San Francisco's afraid of Dallas. I don't think they're afraid of Detroit. They're definitely not afraid of Philly.
Right.
I think there's real fear if they have to see the Rams. And because they're going to see them early. If the Rams win this week, they see them coming off of a bye week. Christian McCaffrey's coming back. How's his health? I think that's the one team in the NFC the 49ers don't want to see. And if they do, those tickets could be looking really nice come second week of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. I haven't done any playoff best ball drafts yet, but I've been playing through in my mind which combinations of teams I would want to stack. And I hadn't really thought too hard about like a Rams Ravens route going, because obviously you can't do Niners and Ravens or you won't make it out of the first round.
Right
now. But now you're selling me on maybe the Rams are that wild card team to load up on that could go on a run.
Yeah. Sidebar here, if I may,
mm-hmm.
if there were two teams that I would probably stack for best ball, it's chalky, but you just got to think they've got the easiest path, and I'm in quotations here. It's probably Buffalo and Dallas because of where they're seated. Mm-hmm. They've got the clearest, easiest. I think their path is easier than San Francisco and Baltimore, for what it's worth. And that sounds crazy on paper until you look at how it breaks out. If Miami wins, then Miami plays Baltimore, and then Cleveland goes to play Buffalo, which a little bit tougher. But and then if the Rams win, San Francisco has to play the Rams. Mm-hmm. If Dallas wins, they end up playing, you know, Philly or Tampa. You see what I'm saying? Like, they've just right. got this path being the two seed that is in their favor this season.
Interesting.
Let's talk about DFS for a minute, NFL. You know, is the process of putting together winning lineups in the playoffs different for you? You know, because I mean, like, I was looking at, you know, I've been playing around with the DraftKings lineups already, obviously. And it's hard to put a lineup together. Well, it's easy to put lineups together. I find it hard to put lineups together that really seem to differentiate themselves, right? I think the pricing is a little looser. I think, you know, there's not going to be as many clear values. I think a lot of people end up going, you know, in similar directions. I mean, is there any tips, tricks, you know, for doing this for all these years, that when putting together DFS lines playoff time, that you lean on yourself?
I do. And I don't change my process much, because here's the simple rule of my process is this: what story am I telling myself about the weekend? Because sometimes I think, look, we're all analytical guys, and I am, and I dig into all this stuff. But at the end of the day, game flow still dictates half of DFS. We might not think about it that way, but the game itself dictates the results. Case in point, if I think Dallas is going to get out to a big lead here against Green Bay, then I have every incentive of the world to attack Jordan Love in this Green Bay passing game, because they're just going to be throwing all game long. And so while Dallas may get out to a lead early, Love and the receivers could absolutely light this thing up in the second half. And my example is always, I call it the Blake Bortles effect. How many times 7-8 years ago did Blake Bortles have -5 fantasy points in the first half? And by the end of the game, he's got 30. Because that team was so bad, he just had to keep throwing and keep running. And that's fantasy points. So that, I think that's the difference between the sports betting, that sometimes we don't, if we try to carry it over, we make mistakes. Tell yourself a story and build for that story. And in the end, I live with the results of how I think the stories are going to go.
So, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you think there's a little bit more value with, you know, being that it's win or go home now, in teams that may, you know, if you think a team's going to fall behind early, the Bortles effect, I guess, you know, but it's even more pronounced in the playoffs is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, I think it's way more, because teams don't have time to play around, because the other team in the playoffs, typically teams aren't going to take their foot off the gas unless, I mean, they're up 50-10 or something. In the fourth quarter, if it's 28-24, that other team's not slowing down. They may run the ball to run some clock, but they're going to keep their play-action game going. They're going to keep their short passing game. They're going to keep their intermediate game. Maybe don't take as many chances downfield, but they're still trying to score points. And so the other team has to combat that somehow, or they have to keep throwing. They don't have time to turn around and play the 3 yards in a cloud of dust game. So teams that I think are going to be behind are teams that I like to target in the playoffs, because that's where all the fantasy points comes from. In my opinion, last point for me about DFS, I do think the game of the week is Cleveland Houston. To me, that's the one shootout. Both sides can put up 30 points in the right situation. Both quarterbacks have a little bit or enough gunslinger in them and enough weapons to get it done. controlled environment, not having to deal with the elements. Like, to me, that's the one game this weekend. If I said, hey, I'm going to stack a game, I'd stack that one and leave the other ones out.
Yeah, it's I tend to agree with you. I hate the fact, or love the fact. I'm not sure if I hate or love the fact that it's the first game of the weekend, right? Because, like, you know, you stack that game up, all of a sudden, you know, you got no maneuverability, you know, the rest of the way. Yeah. But I'm curious to see where ownership lands. I'm curious to see where the ownership. Are people going to like go hard at it, or are people going to stay off of it because it you know restricts their maneuverability?
The mental part of DFS. I love this game. And I also hate this game. I'm just like you. I do think this could be the highest scoring game. But, man, players want instant gratification, don't they?
Yeah.
They don't want to wait until Monday or Sunday for those winnings. They want to stack this game and look at all the money that they're making early and then watch it all burn to the ground as everybody else has production. I don't know why. It's a story as old as time. DFS right. players want instant gratification. This is probably going to be the highest owned game of the week. Just got to get different in a couple spots.
Yeah, and what's interesting also on the flip side of that is that the Eagles-Bucks game will probably be the lowest owned game of the week. And there is definitely a path for that game to get pass heavy and pass crazy. Right?
Absolutely. On both sides.
On both sides.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
All right, I got to build some lineups.
All right, yeah, we'll wrap it up so Jeff can get to lineup building. But you've gotten me sufficiently fired up. Well, I'm excited for all these games, except maybe not so excited for Eagles-Bucks. I'm kind of dreading that. But the rest of it I'm excited for. Great talking to you. In case anyone doesn't follow you on Twitter, he is at ChiefJustice06. Anywhere else people should be going to keep up with you, Will?
That's my mainstream, unless you want to hop in the RotoGrinders Discord and hop in Chiefs Prop Shop. That's where I'm talking all things props all day long. Not going to go down that rabbit hole either, because I'm talking about tennis and hockey and all kind of stuff that we don't need to discuss today.
Okay, but we will have you back on for a deep dive on KBO soon, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait. Can't wait.
Thanks so much, Will. Great talking to you.
Same here.
Two men. $10,000. Will they run it up or blow it all? It's time to check in on the Gamble On Bankroll.
We'll get to bagels and locks shortly, but first let's update our betting bankroll. And there's a lot to update, so I'll try to move quickly. First, NFL futures that officially got graded with the completion of Week 18. We had two bets on most touchdown passes. You had $20 on Lamar at 75-1. I had $50 on Tua at +600. Both lost. And of course, we were just betting the wrong markets. Lamar is going to win MVP. Tua led the league in passing yards. Lost $70 there. Most rushing yards.
No.
Okay. I won't even say the names. We lost $70 on a couple of bets that didn't quite pan out. I went big on Mike Evans under 65.5 receptions. I risked $240 to win $200, and he hit the over by like week 13 or 14. I also went big on the Colts under 6.5 wins, another terrible assessment by me. I thought they'd be like a 4-win team, and they went 9-8. I lost us another $200 on that. A bit of redemption with Anthony Richardson under 2,600.5 passing yards, but I only made a small bet. We won $100. This next one I still say was a great bet. Vikings to make the playoffs at +165 a few weeks into the season. Absolutely would have won if Kirk Cousins hadn't gotten hurt. But instead, we lost $80. Thankfully, your bet a few weeks ago on the Seahawks to miss the playoffs dug us about halfway out of this hole. Great bet. You resisted the urge to hedge. We won $320. As for last week's new bets, I took 5 moneyline underdogs. 2 of them won, the Titans and Giants, so that made it profitable overall. We won $39. Your golf parlay on Morikawa and Åberg to both finish top 10. Morikawa did. Åberg finished somewhere around bottom 10. We lost $50 on that. But our adjusted line of Michigan -7.5 over Washington was a winner. We profited $104 on that. So our graded futures lost us $240. Our new bets last week won us $93. So for the week, we lost $147. We're now down by $5,332. But the amount we have on hold in futures is significantly reduced, down to $1,720. So that leaves us with $29.48 available to bet with this week. And before we start, well, actually, I should interrupt myself to ask if you have anything to say about any of those results that I just ran down, Jeff. Any comments, analysis, etc.?
Nah, the Lamar thing pisses me off, though. I mean, that's there's a lesson there. If you're going to bet on somebody at long odds to throw the most touchdown passes, you should also probably fucking bet on them when they got them MVP.
Yeah, although, you know, his MVP odds never got super attractively high. Like, he was never the favorite until the end, but he was kind of always, like, in the 1,400, 1,800 range. I don't think he ever got really higher than, like, plus 1,800 at any point this season, so.
I don't know the answer to that, but I bet he did. I think, you know, the market, I can't say for sure, but I'd be, even still, if you're going to bet somebody to lead the league in touchdown passes, it probably makes sense to just sprinkle a little bit at MVP. Lessons learned,
exactly. All right, so now before we start placing new bets, a quick listing of all our NFL postseason futures that are still live, just so we know what we already have. We have $20 on the Dolphins to win the Super Bowl at plus 3,000. Yeah. It's not a bad price. They're about plus 2,000 now, but it ain't winning.
Yeah.
We have $100 on the Eagles to win the NFC at plus 330. Terrible price, and they have no chance. $25 on the Lions to win the Super Bowl at plus 1,800. Not happening, but yeah, so-so price. Yeah. $25 on the 49ers over the Bills in the Super Bowl at plus 2,200. That's certainly live.
I like that. Yeah.
And $20 on the Rams to win the NFC at plus 4,000. You got a great price there. It's still a long shot, of course, but good price. Anything to comment on with any of these, Jeff?
Yeah, you know, the Rams closed 8-1. Do you realize that?
Wow. So what were they, were like 2-5?
3-6.
They were 3-6. 3 plus 8. I just lost it. Or were they 3-5?
I don't know. 3-5, man. It doesn't matter.
That sounds
they
right.
Close. They won.
They close strong is the point. Yeah.
Something like that, you know. Yeah. Right. I don't know. I mean, it's my bet, so obviously I'm shaded here, but it seems like if it's, I think I don't know. They seem to be very dangerous. I wouldn't want to play them.
No. Yeah, that's what the chief was saying about they're the team San Francisco doesn't want to see. You got a good price there. There it was 40-1 and when you bet it, and now it's something like 22-1. So, let's get on to the new bets, and I'm up first this week, and actually that's a perfect setup for the first bet here. Now, in real life, I pounced on the Rams plus 3.5 against the Lions as soon as it opened. That's long gone, but we can still get plus 3 and we can get it at even money plus 100 at Fanatics/PointsBet. As you were just saying, the Rams are the hottest team, certainly in the NFC wildcard round. They're as healthy as they've been all season. They have a great coach. They have a quarterback who's been there before. And the Lions have to play with the weight of a million years of disappointment on their shoulders. I'm not saying the Rams should be favored, but I do see this as a coin flip game. Could go either way. 3 points is too many. I just don't see the Lions blowing them out. I don't hate the Rams on the money line at plus 145, but I'll play it a little more conservative and take the points. Let's bet $100 to win $100, Rams plus 3.
All right. I'm going to take the over in the Browns-Texans game. I have it at 44.5, so 110 to win 100. I like the number. I think this game could fly over the over. You know, the Browns are playing like, you know, lunatic football. Passing and turning it over also at a pretty high rate.
True.
Which leads to points. And, you know, the Texans with CJ Stroud, I mean, Jesus, you know, at any time from anywhere on the field, you know, he can put the ball in Nico Collins' hands for a touchdown. So right. I'm just going to take the over here. I like it.
Yeah.
I think it should be closer to like 50.
Yeah. I like it too. I think that's the right side. I think probably the only logical way that it doesn't get there is with the Browns defense versus CJ Stroud that he suddenly turns into playing like a rookie. But all season he has defied all those expectations that he's just going to crack and crumble and play like a rookie. So if it's the CJ Stroud we've seen all season, then yeah, the over is definitely the right side. So for my next bet, out of 17 games this season, any guess, Jeff, how many Jalen Hurts scored at least one rushing touchdown in?
I mean, what did he have, 13? I'll say 13.
Not quite. You overshot it slightly. But in 11 out of 17, he had 15 rushing touchdowns, but they came in 11 games out of 17. So that's 65% of the games that he scored a rushing touchdown. Now, yes, it is true that the Eagles are an abysmal football team right now, and it's possible they'll never make it into the red zone on Monday night. But in fairness, it's mostly their defense that stinks. The offense has been shaky with some terrible play calling, but it's not quite what I'd call awful. Anyway, most books have Hurts to score an anytime TD against Tampa at minus 140 or minus 145, and that's about the right price based on the season he had. ESPN bet is giving us minus 118, and I'm taking it, especially with him having a minor injury to the middle finger on his throwing hand. That probably adds a couple percentage points to him running it in rather than throwing it in when they get close. So, like I said, minus 118, clear value there. Let's bet 118 to win 100 on a Hurts TD and root for a tush-push opportunity, which I have taken to calling the tuchus-puchus, digging into Yiddish roots. My son has dubbed it the anal-ganal. I like that as well.
that's the teenage boy right there.
Right,
that's
indeed.
The teenage boy, the anal-ganal.
The anal-ganal, yes. So I like Hurts to score, and I also like Josh Allen to score in the Bills-Dolphins game. I'm not going to bet that one individually, but he has scored a touchdown in six of the Bills' last seven games. So great chance he takes one in again in frigid Buffalo weather. The Hurts Allen parlay is plus 247. So let's do another 60 to win 148 on that.
All right. My next two bets are wild parlays, but they're small. So let me have fun.
Okay. Have some fun. Sure.
First one is $25 at plus 3285 at FanDuel. So 25 to win $821.
Okay.
It's a five leg touchdown. David Njoku. Isaiah Pacheco, Josh Allen, C.D. Lamb, David Montgomery.
Okay.
Anytime scores. I don't even need to explain myself.
No, I don't think so. They all logically have a shot at scoring a touchdown.
And I think, you know, and again, in these playoff games, you know, as I was discussing with the Chief during the fantasy thing, you know, this is, you're dancing with a girl. You're going to dance with the girl you brought to the dance? Is that what I'm trying to say? You know what I'm trying to say.
Dance with the one who brung you, I think, is the...
That's how I see it.
Okay. Is there, obviously, a five-leg parlay for big money? Four out of five is the most likely outcome here. Which of these five makes you are you the least confident in? If you had to predict who's going to let us down, which one is it?
Njoku.
Okay.
Just because he has, like, the easiest matchup, the clearest path, the hottest, you know, he's the one that worries me, though.
And they play first, so that would kill the bet right out of the gate, and then each of the other four scores just to, like, twist the knife.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
All right.
Guaranteed, yeah.
So for my last bet this week, I'm going back to the well of laying money on boxing favorites. There's not huge value on this one, but there is some value. I'd make Artur Beterbiev about minus 600 to successfully defend his light heavyweight championship against Callum Smith. FanDuel makes him minus 430. So it's not enormous value, like when Ryan Garcia was around minus 400 and I said he should be like minus 1,000. So we'll go a little smaller here. Not the full 430 to win 100. Let's just risk 215 to win 50. It's a way to score a small win to help offset my likely losses on my NFL bets.
Good. I will not be offsetting my likely losses.
You'll be adding to them?
I'll be adding a $25 to them in another parlay here, plus 2072. This one I got at Caesars to win 543. It's a six leg. who I think is going to win each game.
Okay, all right.
It's simple as that. Browns, all money line. Browns, Chiefs, Bills, Cowboys, Rams, and Bucks.
Okay.
Who makes me most nervous? The Rams. Because you, me, and everyone else thinks the Rams are going to win this game.
Right. So they're the Rams and the Bucks are the two official underdogs among these, and the other four are all favorites.
Yeah. I think the Browns are a better team. They have a better defense. The Chiefs and Bills, I'm not sure. Well, the Bills are better than the Steelers, obviously. I think the Dolphins are superior team. It's just these weather games. I mean, it's going to be fucking cold in both these places.
Right.
So I'm going to go with the home team there. I think the Cowboys will have they're going to outlast the Packers. You know, the Rams are the Rams. And, the Bucks and Eagles. I'll tell you, that's a sneaky game, man. I think that game could – I think I said it in the interview. I think that game could get real wacky.
Yeah, it certainly could. With the Eagles' defense as bad as it is. I guess the X factor that that Will didn't comment on in terms of, like, you know, digging in on the Rams with the three – or the Bucks with the 3 points is just the health of Baker Mayfield, that if he's, like – I think he's got shoulder issues, ankle issues, something like that, whatever. If he's banged up enough, that helps maybe explain why the Eagles are favored. If he just, like, can't get anything done, they did score 3 field goals and no touchdowns against Carolina. So I guess maybe that's the one reason that, but if he's remotely healthy, he is going to put up good passing yards against this disaster of an Eagles defense right now.
So. Yeah.
All right. Now it is time for bagels and locks. Last week, we both won with the Giants. Amazingly, we're 2-for-2 when our locks line up. So, Jeff, your record stands at 10-5. Really damn good. Kind of tragic that you haven't been placing a bankroll bet on your lock every week. And I'm 9-6, which would seem great if you weren't sitting here at 10-5. So anyway, I'm thinking we'll keep doing these through the first two rounds of the playoffs. And after that, there aren't enough games to pick from. But we'll do it two more weeks. That work for you?
Yeah, it's fine. I'm good with that.
Okay, so it's probably going to be kind of obvious that I am going Rams +3. I already explained why. I actually think there's a clear correct side on 4 of the 6 games. I like Packers +7.5. I like Bucks +3. I like Dolphins +4.5. They're all lock adjacent in my view, but give me the Rams getting 3 points in Detroit as my stone cold can't lose bet the farm. Thank God I don't have a farm to bet lock of the week.
What do you think I'm going with?
I think you're going to go with the Rams +3.
I'm not. I'm going over 44.5 in the Texans.
Ah, okay. All right. I really don't know you at all, clearly, at this point. You were setting me up for what seemed like an obvious conclusion, and I blew it.
No, this Rams game, I'm telling you, everybody likes the Rams here. It's really starting to make me nervous.
I guess, but I don't know. What was the one a couple weeks ago when we had the Rams against the Saints, and it was the very clear public side, and the sharps were all saying the opposite, and,
that's true.
And we were right. Every now and then, the square side is the winning side.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode of Gamble On. Thanks, everybody out there, for listening, and thanks again to our guest, the Chief, Will Priester. You can find me on Twitter at Eric Raskin and Jeff at Jeff Edelstein, and follow USBets at US_bets. Go to USBets.com for all the latest news and analysis from the world of gambling, and subscribe to this podcast on Megaphone, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else. And before we go, a quick dedication. I want to dedicate this week's podcast to Doug Seeley, beloved cat of our friend and colleague Mike Seeley. Doug died this week at the far too young age of 6. My heart goes out to Mike and especially his kids. I'm not a cat guy personally, and I couldn't be even if I wanted to be due to horrible allergies, but I am a pet guy and an animal guy generally, and I'm a huge fan of giving pets human names, especially humdrum human names like Doug. Great name for a cat. R.I.P. Doug Seeley. We dedicate this episode of Gamble On to you. And with that, Jeff, please take us out.
All right. You know, I did a pretty big piece this week over at Sports Handle on a deceptively difficult question to answer. Are Americans bad at sports betting? I talked to a bunch of people, and Alan Bowden over at EKG, you know, others in Krychek, he had the best answer. You know, basically what he said is to the pros, you know, be there on either side of the counter, like the Captain Jacks or the Jeff Bensons of the world. Yeah, we do suck at sports betting. But like to analysts like Ryan Sigdahl, Craig Hallam, or like somebody like Brendan Bussman at B Global, most of Americans are in this just for fun. So what's the big deal if we or they are betting with our heart or just with the hope for a big payday, right? You know, to Byron, it's impossible for these two sides to meet. You know, they're playing different games, speaking different languages. You know, but here's the thing. Sports books, you know, even the soft, mushy ones, they're in this to make money. Mm-hmm. They're all offering basically the same product, and they're all hoping that we do kind of suck. But if a company can come in and offer something strictly for that fun set, strictly for the people who are in it for fun, well, that would be something, you know, a place for bad or carefree bettors to feel at home, if you will, something different. Yoo-hoo, underdog, waiting to see what you guys got up your snout. You know, when you come launching in North Carolina, I think I have no insight as to what underdogs are going to be offering, but I think that's if my brain is in the right place, I think that's where it's headed. I think it's something that is just simply more fun and directed at people who are in this just for the fun. In the meantime, as always, gamble on.